Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you for tuning in. Going to be here until 10 o'clock tonight, and hopefully between now and then, you will find something worthwhile. You never can tell. Maybe this is it. It's a grave discussion. That's the first of many bad puns, I'm sure. As we welcome to the program, Adam Seltzer. Hi, Adam. How are you? Adam?
Hey, you can hear me, right?
Now I can hear you, yeah.
Yeah, you can.
Boy, I thought maybe some spirit from the beyond had suddenly exercised their ghost privilege and
got right into the phone.
Yeah, snafu'd our connection. Adam, if you don't know, is really an incredible individual. We're going to be talking about his book called Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols and Secrets. But there have been so many in the past. I love some of these titles. Mysterious Chicago, History at the Coolest, Ghosts of Lincoln, Discovering His Paranormal Legacy. Who knew he even had one?
I didn't make up the subtitle myself.
The Ghosts of
Chicago. That book was an attempt at, there's all these stories about Lincoln haunting every place that he ever set foot in, quite a few places that he didn't. That book was an attempt to examine where all those stories came from and trace them back to their earliest sources and examine how they grew and evolved over time.
Well, one of the things that these efforts and the one that we're going to be dealing with about Graceland Cemetery that impressed me is to put these books together, Adam, you must have spent an unbelievable amount of patience and effort and energy into research because these are so detailed. What is your background? What motivates you to do this type of thing?
Well, I was an English major. This is what you do with the BA in English, I suppose. People wonder that all the time. Well, research is addictive to me. Once I start getting into the newspaper archives, not only do you just want to find that one more nugget of information about the story you're looking for that might be in a microfilm room or in a legal archive or somebody's diary, but when you're reading through old newspapers, you might look at the other column and find some whole other story to trace.
Right.
So it's a never-ending thing.
Yeah, it's a rabbit hole, and you never know where it leads, so to speak. Would that be a correct description? Yeah.
I say that so often on my live streams. People drink every time I say rabbit hole.
I didn't know that was a thing that you did, but I can totally see why. We're going to take a break in a minute or so, and then really get into some of the incredible individuals who are in Graceland Cemetery on Chicago's Northwest Side. How would you describe, what were the beginnings of the cemetery itself, of Graceland itself? What were its beginnings?
Well, in the 1850s, what is now Lincoln Park was the city cemetery, but by all accounts, it was absolutely disgusting. It was a very sandy, neglected place. They hadn't really thought about irrigation at all. Bodies tended to float back up to the surface every time it rained. A guy named Thomas Barber Bryan lost his son in 1855, and he found the cemetery repulsive, so he thought, okay, we've got to get a nicer cemetery around here. So he started researching things like cemetery management, which was a very new thing at the time. People before just a generation previously, pretty much everybody who died in a major city was buried in churchyards. They got really overcrowded really quickly. But he ended up buying a bunch of land up on the north side and started a cemetery about 5 years later, and that was Graceland.
Bodies were floating to the surface in Lincoln Park? Is that
all
what
the time? All the, when they weren't getting mixed into the drinking water, they were definitely known to float back up towards the surface.
Thank God for progress. Stay on the line, stay on the line, Adam. We've got a lot more ground to, uncover, so to speak. And we'll be back
here. They're never going to stop.
No, they're never going to stop. The Grateful Dead. Get it? 18 minutes.
It has been a long, strange trip.
It has. 18 minutes after 7 with John Landecker at 720 WGN. And we're talking to Adam Seltzer, whose book is called Author. Well, no, it's not called Author. Adam Seltzer, who is the author of Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols, and Secrets. So let's get into it. First of all, I have to say, ingenious in the way that you have set this book up. It's basically, no, it's basically a walking tour guide. If you wanted to, I mean, you've got the cemetery mapped out in the book on various pages, depending on where it is that you want to go. You broke down in the cemetery into different groupings and then points of interest, if that's the right term, that people would be able to take a look at and get the backstory from your book while there. I thought that was a super great idea.
I refer to it as the choose-your-own-adventure style of organizing it. Usually with the cemetery book, people have it organized by, like, captains of industry, suffragists, et cetera, soldiers. But so many people fit more than one category. Some people didn't fit any of those categories. And I don't want to know who's going to open a book and actually turn to the chapter Captains of Industry. That sounds frightfully dull to me.
I
mixed it up a little bit, gave everybody kind of an equal footing.
Absolutely. Graceland, by the way, is on Clark Street. It's one of Chicago's most famous cemeteries. And I love this quote from the book. Most everyone here who lived long enough played games, told jokes, sang songs, pulled pranks, fell in love, fell out of love, got diarrhea, pursued hobbies, and landed in trouble.
It's amazing how many diarrhea stories I found just in the course of researching this. But
seriously?
You know, it's one of those things, it's deeply personal, but everyone can relate to it. And,
well, yes, that's
true.
And,
of course, cholera, that was the first symptom of cholera, so that came up quite a bit. Louise de Koven-Bowen told a story about stealing gooseberries from another guy who has a giant statue there, and the digestive issues convinced her to become a social reformer, I think. Taught her a lesson about stealing, anyway.
What are some of the... Well, let's start with, like, what are some of the famous names that are in this cemetery? And then, you know, we're going to be doing this until about 8 o'clock, so we'll have time to, like, delve deeper into some of the more obscure yet interesting stories that you've uncovered. But who are some of the cemetery headliners, for lack of a better
term? Well, Marshall Field, Ernie Banks, Potter and Bertha Palmer, Philip Armour, the hot dog guy. Quite a lot of architects, too. Daniel Burnham, Holliber Jr. and Sr., Root Jr. and Sr., Fosler Kahn, Bruce Campbell, Bruce Graham. I always call him Bruce Campbell. I very nearly had that go into the book, that particular typo. That would have been really embarrassing.
Oscar Meyer is there?
He's at Rose Hill.
Oh, he's at Rose Hill.
I always wished he and Armour were in the same.
Yeah, wouldn't that be
so
great?
Have, like, zombie hot dog wars at night. It would be kind of a mixture of the Beat It video and the Thriller video, all tied into one, but with more meat.
Well, then I'll turn it over to you. I mean, I've got the book. Well, I don't have the book, but I had the PDF. And so I'm going through it, and it's all broken down into cemetery entrance, the Sherman plot, the pyramid, the column. The Getty family tomb, the Eddy triangle, just all sorts of very interesting, intriguing labels. Let me try something. Is it Colonel Webb's hidden monument?
Yeah, that's when you first come into the cemetery, you mostly see foliage, but kind of hidden back behind it, there's an illegible grave that turned out to be a guy named Colonel Webb. He was a Civil War casualty. Very early in the war, he died of typhoid fever. And when the cemetery offered the city several months later this plot of land here for dead from the Battle of Shiloh, the city decided to bury them at Rose Hill instead. So they just took this guy out of the vault since nobody had claimed his body and buried him in that plot instead. It's mostly just flowers now. But apparently it was thought of initially as a soldier's plot, and they just used it for the one guy.
Oh, so they had planned to...
That's the impression that I get.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those things where, you know, there was a rivalry between Graceland and Rose Hill, but they wouldn't have said it out loud. You have to kind of read between the lines to see some of these things.
It's a very interesting concept, the cemetery rivalry. I'm not quite sure how that manifests itself.
They were both founded about the same time, and neither of them wanted the other cemetery to get all of the prominent people.
I guess there's something to that. I mean, if you're in the cemetery business and you want to have some extra attractions.
Well, there was people weren't above accusing them of all kinds of things. There was a Colonel Wyman was buried at Rose Hill, And there were these rumors that they had stolen him from his family plot to rebury him at Rose Hill because everybody would be wanting to be buried around his famous monuments, which is kind of a jokes on them thing now. You know, even the biggest Civil War buffs don't really know Colonel Wyman that much anymore.
I remember Burt Wyman. That's a whole different story. So how about Dr. Daniel Brainerd, the Count of Rush University? That title really intrigued me.
Yeah, his, he was the founder of Rush University. He came to Chicago just because, as I recall, he got to Chicago and ran out of money to go any further, so he just stayed here. His students referred to him as the Count because he had this regal bearing about him. This was before Count Dracula, so I don't know if the Count had the same connotations then that it does now.
Right.
But he was a doctor here in Chicago. He was also an expert on snake bite cures.
I'm just going to start throwing stuff out. If there's something that comes to your mind,
I can't remember it all.
You know, and also, you know, Adam, if there's something that you, well, we've got time, but I mean, I don't want to miss something simply because I've got a list that I'm going through. By the way, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Adam Seltzer, and he's got a great book about Graceland Cemetery and what's in there, the secrets, the famous people. It's very complete, and it's also set up in a way that if you had the book in your hand and were going through the cemetery, you could follow the routes that were that he has set up in the book. But and you've got a history of, well, paranormal, ghosts, ghost
tours. I worked
tours.
In the ghost tour business for a long time.
Yeah, the ghost tour business, yeah.
Yep.
Which is not a business that a lot of people get into. What motivated you to be a ghost tour guide, for lack of a better term?
I'll totally level with you. I answered an ad on Craigslist and got that job.
No kidding!
You know, my friends and I always loved watching, you know, it was back when we were kids, the ghost hunting TV shows hadn't really come into their own, but we would watch and search up reruns with Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, yeah.
There was a show called Sightings that Henry Winkler produced in the early
90s. I remember that, yeah.
And, yeah, we watched all of those things religiously. And, you know, we weren't going to find a Scottish lake monster in Des Moines where I was growing up, but ghosts can pop up anywhere. So,
right.
You know, I was pretty well-versed in ghost lore and famous ghosts and various theories behind them. So I was able to put together a pretty good ghost tour. Well, they gave me a route and they taught me all the stories that I was supposed to tell. But really, that's what kind of got me into research. The guy who taught me the stories, the historical parts, I was kind of afraid might not be entirely accurate. So I was afraid I was going to get fact-checked or something. So I kind of threw myself into getting all the primary sources I could so I could back up whatever I was saying. And then in the process, found so many other stories that didn't really fit on a ghost tour.
Right.
But, you know, they all end up in the cemetery, so.
That's right. And there are a variety of type of folks with a variety of interesting bylines here. John Butler Dickey and the other Great Chicago Fire. What is that?
Yeah, that was the day before the Great Chicago Fire in 1871. If you said the Great Fire, you would have met this one in 1857 that supposedly started in a fight in a brothel. Some guy didn't want to pay and ended up knocking over some candles or something. That was one of the rumors. Nobody would really. It was one of those things. It was impossible to get to the root of what really happened. But several buildings around what is now Wacker Drive burned. And in those days, they didn't have an actual fire department in Chicago yet. They just had volunteer squads that would induce people to come help fight fires by offering free whiskey. Which, yeah, I think the next day the Tribune said by the time the firefighters arrived, they didn't know if they were in a fire or a wedding.
Wow, that is a story right there.
Yeah. There's so many stories like this. You know, there's the famous stories in Chicago history, then there's others that nobody really retold 20 years later.
Right.
They just kind of fall through the cracks.
Right. And they're all really, well, not all, but I mean, I would say a great majority of them are as interesting as any of the other more famous stories that people have heard about.
I would say so, yeah. It can be kind of random what people end up remembering. You know, there's that line in Hamilton, who lives, who dies, who tells your story. That's nobody lives, everyone dies. Historians tell your story.
Yeah. I think I got time to get one more quick story in before we break for the bottom of the hour. Inez Briggs, alias Inez Clark, the girl in glass. What's that?
That's what was maybe the first Graceland story I ever heard. It's a statue of a girl who died at the age of 7. The statue is encased in a glass box now to protect it from the elements. And it's a very haunting statue. The people have been telling ghost stories about it. It appeared in a children's book by Lindsay Curry a while ago. It's a very haunting statue, but not very much was known about her. For a while, the story was that there was never an Inez at all. The statue was just an advertisement for a gravestone carver. But a genealogist found out that her real name was Briggs. It looks like it's Clark on the gravestone. Clark was her mother's later married name. And I was able to find her mother's divorce records, which filled in a lot more blanks in the story.
And it's actually encased in glass.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a glass box over it.
I saw the picture in the book, and it's like very off-putting. It's very eerie, very bizarre.
It is. You can see ghost stories almost had to develop around it.
Right. I mean, it's inevitable something looks like that. Stay on the line there. We're going to do more about the people, the stories, and the secrets with Adam Seltzer, author of Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols, and Secrets. We'll do more when we come back, but now it's the bottom of the hour and time for WGN News. More Grateful Dead music with John Landecker at 737 at 720 WGN. We're talking to Adam Seltzer, who is the author of Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols, and Secrets, which just came out recently. Is that correct?
Just about 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to miss this, where do we pick up the book itself? From the normal places or?
Oh, yeah. Any store that doesn't have it in stock locally can at least order it.
Right. And I want to say once again that it's ingeniously constructed, not only as a historical document, but also Adam lays out the cemetery with actual maps and breaks down the maps into sections and then breaks down who's who in what section so that you literally, if you wanted to, could do a walking tour of the cemetery following the guidelines set up in the book, which I think I just love that idea.
It might take you more than one trip.
Yeah. How big is the cemetery itself? Do you know?
I think it's something like 150 acres. Acres is a unit of measurement I could just never get my head around.
Right. Right. So, and you know, you mentioned
it goes from Irving Park to Montrose between Clark and a few blocks east.
You mentioned in the last half hour that Ernie Banks is there?
Yeah, Ernie Banks is he's one of the more recent attractions there.
So they're still taking customers, so to speak. It's not
people
full.
Who've had plots for a long time but haven't actually died yet.
I gotcha.
Effectively full, but new spaces do manage to come up. People will have large family plots that they decide not to use, so they sell them back to the cemetery. Things come up.
And be in Chicago, I'm sure somebody knows a guy. You know what I mean?
Possibly. Yeah, I know these people. I know the people at the cemetery.
I know a guy.
Give me a shovel, I'll find you a place.
Let me just go to some of the other labels that piqued my interest. And, you know, once again, I want to say, Adam, just because I don't get to something and you think it's pretty cool, make sure you put it on the air.
I don't really have like ones that I must insist on in every interview. There's so many good stories. It's great to be able to mix it up.
All right. Now, where was I? I had this all laid out just moments ago with some really, I believe it is Henry Garver and the Statue of Death.
Graves.
Graves. That's even better. Henry Graves.
The puns just write themselves with that one.
Yes.
Well, there's a statue. There's a guy named Henry Graves. He and his father, Dexter, came to Chicago when you still had to get here by schooner across the Great Lakes. And Henry became a big racehorse breeder. He ended up putting aside $250,000 in 1907 money in his will for a family monument, which is about 10 times more than this thing would have cost. So there's kind of a mystery as to what happened to the other $225,000. But his heirs commissioned a statue from Laredo Taft, the sculptor. They got this guy in a hooded robe holding it up over his face, vampire style. Once again, it inspired a few urban legends. You'd almost be disappointed in Chicagoans if it did not.
How did he make all that money?
Feeding racehorses.
No kidding.
Eventually, there was a lot of money and resources back then. And I think he also probably bought some land early on.
Real estate? Yeah.
He lived down on the south side, and when Camp Douglas, the Confederate POW camp, was built, it was really right on his land. He just refused to move. If you look on maps of Camp Douglas, there's a little spot that says Graves. And everybody who looks at it, including me, assumes that that's like a soldier cemetery. No, it was just Mr. Graves' house. He refused to move.
Mr. Graves' house. Jacob, is it Ream and the Whiskey Ring?
Yeah, Jacob Ream, when he was the chief of Chicago police for a while. When he died, he was a fairly wealthy man. And a couple of newspapers noticed, wow, it really pays to be the chief of police in Chicago.
Oh, I've heard that story.
He had been the head of the Whiskey Ring in Chicago. This was this 1870s scheme where millions of dollars that were supposed to go to the government for whiskey taxes were instead going into the pockets of government officials that went all the way up to the upper reaches of the Grant administration. And it was a huge scandal at the time. It'd probably be about a 45-minute story today.
But back then,
it threatened to consume the whole Grant administration, really. Grant eventually pardoned Jacob Ream.
Didn't Grant have
involvement in it?
Is it an urban legend? Didn't Grant have a drinking problem?
My understanding of it kind of depends on whose source you're reading, is he wasn't a big drinker. When he got drunk, he got really drunk. It wasn't so much a drinking problem. It's just don't let the guy get drunk. And
gotcha.
Most of the time when you're out in the field, there wasn't a whole lot else to do.
Well, I find it ironic that his name would be attached to something called the Whiskey Ring. That was all. let me see. What else did I want to get here? Is it the Newberrys and the legend of the barrel?
Oh, yeah. Well, Walter Newberry was a real estate guy. Most accounts of him make him sound like a very dull human being, but then his daughter's diary makes him sound much better. He was always encouraging her to be somebody, which I don't think you don't hear about dads saying that to their daughters quite as much in those days, so good for him. But he died at sea. And normally when you die at sea, they bury you at sea, but somebody on the ship convinced them, no, this guy's rich, we've got to preserve the body and get him a proper burial. And about the only thing they could do is put his body into a barrel of rum. And they made the rest of the trip to France inside of a barrel of rum. A lot of people joked. I don't know if he was really a teetotaler, but the story was he was a man who never drank, and now he was given the most alcoholic of graves. And about 20 years later, a story went around that he had actually been buried in that same barrel of rum, which is fairly unlikely. The Chicago press at the time even got a hold of the guy who was in charge of customs at Le Havre, France, where the ship was going. And he said, yeah, of course I remember that. You don't forget a thing like that. But I had him put into a proper casket to be shipped back home. And by all available records, yes, he's in a proper coffin. But when I think about it, could they have really found the guy who was working customs in Le Havre, France, 20 years after the fact?
And if my memory would be jogged if the guy was actually in a barrel of rum. I don't know if I'd remember the guy if he was just your basic cadaver heading back home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they got dead bodies showed up all the time. But getting him out of that barrel of rum and into a coffin would have been a deeply unpleasant task.
Jeez.
And not the kind of thing you could forget no matter how hard you tried.
I would say so. I love these stories. Merrick?
Noah Merrick. That was one of my favorite discoveries. Is prior to doing this research, it was generally said that there are two possible Revolutionary War soldiers buried in Chicago. There's one guy who never got moved from Lincoln Park, but he was probably lying. And there's a guy at Rose Hill that the grave said soldier of the revolution, but we can't find any records to back it up or which revolution it was. Mm. But it turns out there's a guy who somehow slid under the radar named Noah Merrick buried at Graceland Cemetery. I'm going to lose my second.
It's okay. Take your time. It's only radio.
All right. There we go. Okay. My headphone battery died there.
It happens.
Yeah, so Noah Merrick was, turned out he was a Revolutionary War soldier. Now, to call him a Revolutionary War hero might be stretching a bit. He served for 3 weeks and did nothing that anybody cared to write down. As near as I can tell, he later told his wife and kids that he served the whole length of the war. Near as I can tell, he stayed for 3 weeks drinking beer and singing Yankee Doodle, then they sent him home because there was nothing to do. And but he went on to eventually, when he was about 60, he married a woman who had previously been his teenage stepdaughter. She was about 20 now. They had two kids, moved to Illinois, probably to get away from neighbors who were just kind of horrified that he had married his teenage stepdaughter.
Yeah.
Then he spent the rest of his life telling them all of his Revolutionary War stories that apparently turned out not to be true. So he's a very Second City sort of Revolutionary War soldier to get.
We're talking to Adam Seltzer, author of Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols and Secrets, and there's more on the way next on 720 WGN. More from the Grateful Dead, 749 with John Landecker. There's a method behind that musical madness, because we're talking to Adam Seltzer, who's the author of Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols and Secrets. I've got some text information here. 219 thinks you sound like Dan Aykroyd. 312 says,
Ghostbuster. Sure.
312 right. 312 says your video tours are great. So I take it there. Where do we find your video tours?
Oh, well, you can find links to everything on adamchicago.com. That's the easiest thing to remember. But over on the Mysterious Chicago Facebook page, I do miniature tours, like a 10-15 minute tour, almost every single day.
Oh,
and
really?
Twice a week we do full length ones. We've done all kinds of stuff. We do a lot of cemetery tours, architecture tours. We do a thing called time travel pub crawl during the pandemic, we couldn't go to bars for real. Right, so we started going virtually. And I figured when we're going virtually, we can go to any bar from history. It doesn't matter if it still exists or not.
Exactly.
So we had a lot of fun with that. It was a good history stuff. Good excuse to drink a lot.
So you mentioned a quasi Revolutionary War hero. So there are some others that caught my attention. Elizabeth E. Lee, Gridley Butler, Daughters of the Revolution.
Yeah, she was the daughter of a Revolutionary War soldier. Her mother, the guy's wife, is also buried in Graceland. She doesn't have a marker of her own. Her mother, Amy Gridley, married Theodore Gridley about 1816, I think, like 40 years after he was in the war. She was 50 years old when she gave birth to Elizabeth in 1826. Which is a pretty impressive feat just in and of itself. And then she lived another 49 years herself. She was 99. There's a great newspaper article about her from towards the end of her life. She says, unlike the conventional old lady, she does not smoke a pipe. Now and then you just bump into stuff like that, like customs that it's implied in the article that everybody knows, but just have been forgotten today. There's one person was just reminiscing about how much she loved this old woman's pink ribbons that I tried to get my mother to wear pink ribbons, and she wasn't even a 50 yet.
Customs change. Horace Jackson and William Gill, freedom fighter?
Those were a couple of black Civil War soldiers who were buried at Graceland. They had both been enslaved in Kentucky. Mm. It was a border state. It fought for the Union, but it was still a slave state. But people kind of saw the writing on the wall. The Union offered to pay up to $300 a head if people let they enslaved join the army. And Jackson and Gill were among those. There were numerous stories of enslavers trying to kidnap people back as soon as they got into the army.
Yeah.
But they fought with the 116th United States Colored Troops, but ended up serving alongside the 29th group from Chicago. So they were quite likely present at Appomattox when Robert E. Lee surrendered, and the two of them ended up drifting to Chicago eventually. And I don't know if it was coincidence. They must have known each other. They lived in the same neighborhood and ended up with burial plots right by each other.
Wow. The
we're
Morris.
Working on getting markers for them. They've never had markers before.
Well, how are you doing that?
There's another black Civil War soldier named William Randall that we've gotten a marker for now.
What can be done to...
It's unmarked in the book, but there's a couple of people who were unmarked when the book was finalized that we've now gotten markers for. So it's already a little bit out of date, but for the best of all possible reasons.
Yeah, that's very commendable. Let's just wrap this up. I got time for one more, I think. The Morrisons, pioneers and eccentrics.
Oh, yeah. It took me a second to remember which Morrisons we were talking about here, but... Orsemus Morrison was a guy who came to Chicago in the 1830s and he'd worked on the Erie Canal, ended up being our first high constable, back when that was what we had instead of a police chief, who was the first coroner and everything. His nephew, Captain E.W. Morrison, was a sea captain until he inherited all the family money. Then he moved to Chicago and acted like he was just trying to spend all of it. He lived like a rock star in the 70s, really. Or an architect at the turn of the 20th century.
Right.
This guy would go around. The newspaper called him the most eloquent blasphemer this side of Brimstone Junction. There'd be entire articles where they would interview him, but most of the quotes were just dash, 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 because he didn't say anything printable. And, you know, there were numerous stories about, like, bartenders would knock on his door and say, you did $15,000 to my tavern last night, and he would just fork over the money because he didn't remember where he had been the night before and had to take their word for it.
Wow. Well, these and other we've just scratched the surface of the incredible stories that are inside Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols, and Secrets. Adam, it's been great to talk to you.
I know that you. I liked your book, too.
Oh, thank you. A lot of ghosts in there.
I'm sure.
Thank you for being with us, and I hope to talk to you again in the future.
Hope so, John.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
You betcha. Adam Seltzer, author of Graceland Cemetery, Chicago Stories, Symbols, and Secrets.